right, opening up the phone lines for listeners' questions and comments.
Hello, Chris. This is Dave calling from California. Curious to find out about, I think you said you moved into a new place. I'm curious is whether you moved your permaculture setup with your tilapia and all that. Just curious to find out how that's going. Hopefully you still got it going on. Keep up the great work. Excellent interviews lately. Thanks.
First up, it's Dave from California. He asks about my family's tilapia and chickens. Well, hi, Dave. Actually, we still have our blue and Nile tilapia from our original stock, and we also have subsequent broods. They're pets. They're not for consumption. In addition, we still have our chickens, which continue to make great pets for our little ones in the family, as well as for their wonderful eggs. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't eat meat at all. In any way, shape, or form. And, you know, I'd like to encourage everyone who's interested to take the plunge. You know, it takes about a year to replenish the body, to remove all meat products from the body. And I'll tell you, after well over 12 months without any meat whatsoever, it's certainly been one of the greatest blessings in my lifetime. So anyone interested, I highly encourage you. But Dave, thanks for asking, and I hope that you're also taking steps to secure your family's future.
Hi, Chris. I love your show. I appreciate what you do. And my question is, what do you think of these stories that surface every so often that claim that somebody through alchemy have somehow been able to manufacture gold? In other words, without mining it, they just make it in the laboratory, I guess. I saw one recently on the Financial Survival Network webpage, and I've seen it in other places, and I would like your comments. Thank you.
And the next caller comments on creating gold through alchemy. Alchemy really has a bad rap. You know, even Sir Isaac Newton was a alchemist, if you will, although he is considered by many to be the father of modern physics in the form that we understand it today. Alchemy was one of his many, many, many passions. So as for whether or not we can produce it yet, produce gold, that is, through chemical processes, I have to say most likely not. As far as we know, it involves huge nuclear forces, such as an exploding star, a supernova. Under the right conditions in the laboratory, I do believe gold can be produced, but that's with an enormous energy expense. And of course, with that energy expense comes huge financial costs. So in other words, it's just not economical right now. I mean, sure, you could make a, you know, a hundredth of a gram or something, but if it costs several million dollars to produce that, what have you really done? That being said, I don't want to discourage folks who are interested and this is their passion. I do believe that eventually new exciting energy sources will be discovered, just like going from the steam age to the coal age, if you will, coal and steam, to now nuclear and petroleum and diesel. You know, these were massive increases, changed the world forever, helped spark a new industrial revolution. Well, similarly, I think we'll see things that we refer to now is free energy, such as tapping into graviton fields, things of that nature, where virtually limitless energy will be available to almost any researcher, and at that point in time, likely many, many decades, if not centuries in the future, with almost limitless energy at your fingertips, well, you can produce almost any metal that you'd like for virtually free. I do believe that this is quite possible, but I wouldn't expect to see it, and at least not in my lifetime, and not likely in our kids' lifetime as well. For instance, you know, diamonds are produced regularly around the world in the laboratory, and many are sold on the market, and they're virtually flawless. However, they're not natural, and there's a lot of debate on whether or not this is realistic and what have you, but yes, they can produce diamonds. If you can produce diamonds, you can also produce gold. Very different process, but still, it is a possibility, just not cost-effective yet.
I just want to make a comment and see if you could help me. Technically, the spot gold price finally gave way to the structurally bear market as prices plunged below 1138, which was nearly a year-long support. It is now 1095 as I speak. Every rally following the initial breakdown in 2013 has failed to exceed the prior rally, which supports the trend of selling into strength. The target of 1,000 represents the support of the 2008-2009 consolidation. the 2001 uptrend in the lower 800s over time will intersect the current downtrend. This, technically speaking, would be a good target objective. I'm aware of the tremendous worldwide demand for physical gold. Also aware of the depletion from the Western central banks sending gold to the East and possibility of a failure to deliver causing a short squeeze that could cause insolvency of many institutions, especially in the derivatives. I would appreciate if you could comment on how to rectify the differences in these two facts. I can't. It's a conundrum to me. Thank you.
George is up next. He uses technical analysis, which seems to indicate a buy in the yellow metal around 800 to 1,000, maybe strong support there. Well, first of all, long time no here. Great to hear from you. Glad you're still listening to the show. You know, it sounds like you've been secretly subscribed to my Alpha Stocks newsletter, and this has been my target now for, I want to say, at least a year. And I've been on record, had the downtrend light up there for several years, it seems now. If I understand the question correctly, you're perplexed, though, by this conflicting bearish signal you see in your technical work and the bullish global demand, of course, fundamental, where there could be a force majeure in the markets and or a derivative squeeze, thanks in part to this monetary machinations and repatriation of the yellow metal into national coffers around the globe. Many thoughts spring to mind here. Firstly, we've had several folks in the industry, some on the show, comment that the powers that be, such as the Plunge Protection Team, could be shorting the precious metals sector in order to orchestrate a positive economic environment. This would be very easy to do, especially with silver. I mean, these are tiny markets relative to the Forex or the Dow Jones, or, you know, I mean, they, you know, gold might comprise just a handful of the Dow Jones holdings in that index. Silver may be just the smallest component of the Dow 30. So it wouldn't take much firepower given massive derivatives leverage to manipulate these markets, especially if you're using Livermore-style tactics. However, I do think it's important for us to recognize the prevailing market bias. You know, this has just been my theme for a decade on this show. You notice that it's downward. I suggest that everyone who's interested direct their web browsers, bookmark it if you like, to stockcharts.com. 2001 to 2005, that period on the weekly chart. You can punch in, let's say, the $XAU, $gold, $silver, each independently. And I think you'll see, especially the XAU, pronounced consolidation, you know, trading range and whatnot. We all, I think, noticed this. I did. I took notice immediately and I thought, goodness, this is an inverted head and shoulder. This is the bottom on the XAU. And I looked at gold and silver and saw similar patterns unfolding. And then, you know, around 2002 to that 2003, it became even more apparent. You could accumulate there from 2002 to 2003, 4, 5, 6, and you still caught the bulk of the move from 2001 to 2012. Okay, so, you know, this 12-year rally, you didn't have to catch it right away to get on board that locomotive, and did it ever steam away at breakneck speed? Catching the exact bottom, maybe not so important for traders, if that's your calling. Not many folks, though, I think, make that a lifelong profession. For the rest of us, I don't expect there to be a sudden snapback that where we all miss the bottom on this. So why be in such a hurry to find a bottom? Let the markets telegraph it to us. For instance, the housing crash gave us 3 or 4 years of a solid downtrend, then bounced along the bottom for 2 or 3 years, and then started a very noticeable uptrend. And it's remained in an uptrend ever since. Will that change? Well, it could. But until then, let's just obey the primary autocorrelation, if you will, or serial correlation, long memory. You can use, insert any term you like for the prevailing theme or trend, up or down, up or down. Well, right now, it's obviously not up. Okay, that's putting it nicely. So no reason to get overweighted on exposure there. Always smart to keep a component. But until we see that change, I wouldn't make it the primary focus. Instead, let's look at markets that are showing long-term status that have turned around. For instance, the U.S. dollar, ticker symbol UUP, and even short-term treasuries, the SHY you can take a look at, 30-year treasuries, TLT, but keep in mind there's a lot more volatility there and higher interest as well. These are areas where you can, you know, start to consider adding a component to your portfolio slowly over time, and as that component grows in value, you might consider adding more through dollar cost averaging, for instance. As for having to catch the precise bottom, I would leave that for the Jesse Livermores of the world, and we all know how that story ended. We don't want to try to catch that, you know, as he pointed out, you know, the top dollar and the bottom dollar of any market move are the most expensive because everybody's trying to reach it.
Hey, Chris, this is Bob in Texas. I wanted to ask a question regarding a lot of this talk involved about bank bail-ins and the possibility of those coming to the United States. Do you think these are going to possibly be your banks with large derivative books and large mortgage books, or is it going to be across the board, banks in general? I'm just curious if maybe you could find a small hometown bank that won't experience a bail-in because it's got good financial conditions. I just want to see what your thoughts are on that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And up next, it's Bob in Texas. He's concerned about the theme of bank bail-ins with large derivatives exposure, mortgage-backed securities, CDOs, credit default obligations, CDSs, credit default swaps, and many other toxic leveraged instruments, which, as we all know by now, starting in 2006-2007, were integral to causing the credit crisis, or at least an underpinning there. If you haven't already downloaded and found a copy of Frank Portnoy's Fiasco, maybe I can find that here and post it for this weekend. He outlines exactly how derivatives hide the true risk. They mask it. They're not transparent. They're opaque. The reality is that no institution, I think, is completely shielded from toxic derivatives. Once the next credit crisis begins in earnest, I think what you'll start to find is that very few of the pros were able to discern which firms were hiding those financial weapons of mass destruction, as Warren Buffett calls them. Now, as for your local bank's idea, this is very solid. I think your local and municipal credit unions and banks offer the most protection, but still, I'd suggest looking for alternatives and diversifying when you can. You really just don't want too many eggs in one basket when it comes to banking exposure. Precious metals, excellent alternatives. James Turk's gold money looks promising. I suspect that we could be entering a period of market volatility that might just lead to a huge unraveling of the financial markets, which could catch billions of investors off guard. Keeping that in mind, as well as the fact that no prediction is 100%, everyone is convinced their ideas are right. What if this turns out to just be a little hiccup on the way to new highs in equities? And bonds lose favor. So that's why having that core diversified portfolio is just so great. And keeping, you know, as Nassim Nicholas Taleb likes to point out, of anti-fragile, fooled by randomness, black swan, and so many others. As he's pointed out, Professor Taleb points out that we really need to keep a good solid 10% at least in cash available, keep something in reserve, so as these markets collapse, as we've seen lately, you can add to your portfolios. And that solid, diversified portfolio will, over time, outperform virtually every professional that you come in contact with. So it's just a fantastic means to financial success. Stay with us right here.